to something that we touched upon earlier about what church is, because you, Chris, you were mentioning people like preaching from the pulpit, and we've talked about discussion and debate. And following on from these verses, it also says each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others faithfully, administering God's grace in its various forms. Now, as church, how do you think that the church should be now, as opposed to what we have as church, preaching from the pulpit? How much has that pattern... I mean, I suppose I'm touching on what Steve's been writing about in his book.
Yeah, I thought you wouldn't forget that.
What?
Sorry, I was distracted.
What was the title? What was the title of the moment? Was
it that Church Lost the Way? I can find it again.
Oh, right, OK. We all need to read that, don't we?
Yeah. Absolutely. By the time it's come to that, it might actually be published. Never know.
I think...
But this is talking about a community, a body of people living a certain way, using the gifts...
Oh, right,
that people have given. Now, to me, that is just speaking to me right now, because we've just been doing a course and we've just been looking at the gifts. And my eyes have been opened to certain gifts that I'd never quite acknowledged or realised were practical gifts, but spiritual gifts. There's such a richness of gifts that we haven't really... If you analyse them, there's certain gifts that we practice, that we have. We haven't realised that they're gifts that God has given us to share with one another.
The way sort of the church culture has grown up here is that, you know, everything is divided into the clergy and the laity. You know, there's this sort of division. And those of us who are ordinary Christians tend to leave all the clever stuff to those who are ordained... Yeah. People like Chris, for instance, in his own life.
We're the only people that know anything.
Well, this is why Chris is actually sitting much higher than the rest of us.
Yeah, you noticed that.
He's on his throne. He's on his reverent throne.
Like a cathedra.
I think it's true, though, but I think that's not the church's fault. It's because we're lazy. I think, you know, too many of us go, my pastor at my church really switched on, very... awesome, and like, oh well, he knows what he's doing, therefore I'll just trust whatever he says on Sunday. It's like, no, he knows what he's doing, but that doesn't mean you don't have to know what.
Well, that's how some people,
we have
some people
to individually
only get their input from their pastor in some cases on a Sunday morning. That's it.
And even if your pastor's pretty good, doesn't mean you don't have to study. You know, we've got to all be. We're all given opportunities. How many of us could have been given so many more opportunities to witness to people if we'd only were actually equipped to be able to handle it?
One of our basic problems, I think, is that we have moved such a long way from the church that Jesus envisaged that it's almost impossible for us to extricate ourselves from what we associate with church. Church services, church meetings, church ways of doing things, and all of that. And I sometimes feel, Lord, I think perhaps you're saying, a plague on all your houses.
Shakespeare, isn't it?
Well, probably. But, you know, being church is not going to church. It really is a very different thing. And maybe in these end times we're seeing that churches, as we have them, are really not going to cut the mustard. We need to start being church. And that doesn't mean that we stop going to a congregation, but maybe we need to change our view of it so that it becomes our first line of mission rather than the source of our life and energy. And that we need to be seeking one another out, the twos and the threes and the fours, coming together as regularly as we possibly can, sharing our lives together, exercising the mutual gifts that we have to minister grace to one another and outreaching to our neighbourhood, worshipping the Lord, coming before the Lord with his word, poring over the word, feeding in the word, being encouraged by those who can teach to be taught, so that we're actually doing the business. And where do you see it happening? Can any one of us round this table say, well, I'm involved in something like that? I very much doubt if we could.
That's in one of your books coming out.
Yeah, it is. Sorry?
What's the title of the booklet? Is it in one of his booklets? Soon to be published.
Yeah, women do get... I mean,
that
what
one
we
passed
did
by,
with our church is and then I know it was a bit, I don't know about controversial, yeah, but there's a, we've changed from being, because it was a big church with lots and lots of people in it, we've turned, you know, we've got clusters, so we've got sub-churches. Yeah. And those are, so, it's, well, you know, it's clusters. Clusters. Whatever it is. So we don't, we go to see, you know, the vicar and have a little, you know, go to church. But also we have meetings, not quite like this, but we'll meet together and we'll share a word and worship. And the clusters have been kind of grouped around different themes. Like we're in a working person's group, so we share the issues of the working things. Yeah. You're a poet, Tommy, you're a poet. But then that's also become a more social thing where, because we're in the working world, we've been going out and like we had a chocolate night the other night, you know, and that, loads of people, loads of girls' night, chocolate night, chicks eat chocolate, and stuff like that. But that's been really good, and I, you know, I always like the house groups, you know, I always like the house groups, and I always think that's a really good way of doing church, because people get, it's a dialogue, which I think is much more the Jewish way of doing it, having a chat, and you know, and how Jesus would have it, they would have sat around a table, eaten, and had a chat. And yeah, I think more women do that though,
because yeah, I belong to one, and it's every other Friday, and it was about 8 of us. We all get together and we ponder different things in the Bible, we all share with each other, and we're all really there to sort of keep each other sort of. Well, stable and helping each other with different problems. Well, yeah, it's very good.
It is Acts 2, isn't it? It's that verse we were looking at earlier about after the gospel was proclaimed and they repented and were baptized, what did they do? Yeah. And verse 42 of chapter 2 of Acts down to the end of the chapter is a wonderful demonstration of what we're talking. They devoted themselves to the apostles' doctrine. So the word was the primary thing. Mm-hmm. And to the fellowship, the koinonia of being one together, and that is such a fabulous word, you know, fellowship. But koinonia doesn't mean grinning at one another over a cup of tea, although I'm quite sure you're able to do that. But, you know, as it's used, for example, in the letter to the Philippians, the word koinonia has to do with shared ministry. It has to do with sharing the deep things in our lives, really the deep things. It has to do with financial commitment. I mean, these are things which are absolutely essential, but very much marginal as far as most churches are concerned. And we've got it upside down. Everything that's important is unimportant to us. Mm. Everything that's trivial is very important to us. And it's just frightening, you know. But it's interesting, isn't it, that as you look at church history, you see, for instance, in the days of John Wesley, John Charles Wesley and Isaac Watts and all that gang, the evangelical awakening. What did they do? They formed cottage meetings. That's where it began to happen. The Wesleys and others, when they were students in Oxford, they got together and they formed these small meetings where they opened their lives to one another before the Lord. And the Lord moved powerfully. They were lampooned by the other students. Absolutely. And they were called the Holy Club, you see. A real put down. But in fact, what came out of that was revival. But it started there. And I believe that, you know, we need to recover that whole sense of being real with one another, real with the Lord, and real with the world, recognizing that we have a job to do which impacts the world, but it starts with our impacting one another under the Lord.
I mean, it's amazing that, you know, you were reading those verses in Acts, and when I sat over there, I was just led to turn to 1 Peter 4.
Absolutely.
And started reading it, because I'd left the table. And it just mirrors those verses exactly. Mm. And after it talks about the gifts and serving each other, it also says, if anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides. Mm. And we were talking earlier about doing it in your own strength and, you know, feeling condemned, you know, you're not doing enough. But it's do it whenever you serve, you do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised not you, but God is being praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power. And then later on it talks about, for if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear that name, for it is time for judgment to begin with the family of God. And if it begins with us, what will the outcome be for those who do not obey the gospel of God? If it is hard for the righteous to be saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinner? So then, those who suffer according to God's will should commit themselves to their faithful Creator and continue to do good. So I'm sort of seeing that we've got to get ready, haven't we? We've got to live. We've got to do the things that it says in Scripture. Live according to what the Word says. Because when that hard times come and we stand up and we can be overcomers and we can withstand all those sort of attacks and everything, then the family of God are the ones that are going to stand, aren't they? Because we've been practicing what God has, you know, told us to do. Mm-hmm. We're stronger.
I think we've gone on for. I think this is a whole new topic, too, and it's very much reflected in your pamphlet. What was the title of it?
Prepare the Way.
Prepare the Way.
The requisite number of mentions so far.
Oh, you've never mentioned the title.
You stop now.
It's got me a few quotes from my book. So, you know. I think I'll finish with a holy word here. What do you get when you drop a piano down a mine shaft?
A-flat minor.
Oh, there we go.
That's
terrible, isn't it? Well, we had to sort of break the holiness. Too holy.
Another
poem.
Right, okay. Countless mathematicians have each declared pi r squared. But in my experience, I have found that pi's are round.
That almost makes sense, that one.
Yeah,
that's
very good.
Right.
Really good. Lasagna is always rectangular.
Almost.
Yeah. Lasagna is always rectangular. I made that up on the spot.
We always get to the profound bit at the end, don't we? Yes.
Saffron Planet. Making sense of it all. Saffron.